Tuesday, January 1st, 2008, upon further review, episode number 53. Well, it's the new year, and we have some New Year's resolutions here at Upon Further Review. We resolve to give you opinions, ideas, concepts, beliefs, and entertainment. You know, basically the same old stuff as 2007. But hey, what can we say? Reviewing things can be a hard habit to break. Okay, Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clear.
And we want to welcome everyone to episode 53 of Upon Further Review and start by wishing everybody a very happy 2008. It is January 1st, 2008, my dear.
So For us.
For those of you in other places, it may be a different day. That's
true. Well, when you're listening to this, it will be a different day.
Well, that's true. Well, right now, it's January 1st. And since we are going to be getting this out soon and not by 2009, it's certainly safe to say happy 2008 to everybody. We hope that everyone has figured out what resolutions they're going to have. Did you have any New Year's resolutions, by the way, hon?
Mm-hmm.
Did you? What were they? Come on. We're public. Let's go here. There is no privacy.
I don't know. I don't have my list.
I see.
I have five.
Oh, five?
I think I have like three or five.
You resolved to straighten me out. That's one of them.
I think like at least half of them, if not more than half of them, are the same from last year.
Oh, really? So it's part two. It's like a continuation. Right, right.
And usually one is, of course, always like get healthy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's...
Right.
Like over the years, it's been more emotionally. Now, I think right now it's physically...
Right.
You know, so I'm sure that's one of them.
And stay healthy, since we'll have a different situation. Clea, by the way, for those of you who have not listened, who have listened to the show before, Clea has not yet given birth. She is still pregnant, and it is not the due date yet. So we're still a little ways from that. We wanted to get another show on before that arrival is there.
We might get another one too.
That's true. Who knows? It's quite possible that will happen. I should mention, by the way, before we go on, I want to go back to the resolution thing. But since I was listening to this podcaster's post review for this week, they did this, and it does make sense. Those of you who've never listened to the show before. We haven't done this thing for a little while, but we are a review show that reviews basically everything. So we review movies and books and TV shows and concerts and politics and
everything. Policies
and everything. Food and dogs and,
Greg,
you know, different
everything.
Stuff. Everything. Right. So you get the idea. So that is what we do every week. The show runs about 30 to 35 minutes, and we have a lot of great loyal listeners that have been continuing to grow over the years. The show's now been going for over a year and a half, and that's great. And yeah, so basically that's the situation, and you can let us know if you're interested in having us review something by you or review something of something else that you just like our take on. We would definitely like that, and you can get in contact with us many ways, but probably the easiest way is by emailing us at upon@furtherreview.net. And if you go to our webpage, www.furtherreview.net, you'll see a lot more ways to do it. Okay, shameless self-promotion over. So anyway, the resolution. So one was getting healthy. Is there any new one for this year that you're doing?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't. I do, but I said I don't have my list in front of me.
So the resolutions have such powerful weight to you that you actually don't remember them.
I don't know. Let me think a second.
I will resolve to have memory.
I mean, anyone knowing me, probably that would be a good resolution. Is I resolve to have a memory?
Yes, yes.
I do.
Right. She has this in her PDA, I should say. So she's looking it up.
I have 2007 resolutions.
All right. Yes.
There were seven of those.
Okay. Just give us a couple of highlights here.
And then I have 2008 now.
Yeah.
So pretty much they relate to physical stuff.
Yes.
All of them. Except for one is I want to get a tattoo. That was last year's resolution, but I couldn't do it because I got pregnant.
Mm.
And then the other one is about comedy. Just keeping up with that.
Okay.
That's it.
Wow, that was really exciting, hon.
Well, you know,
I was expecting you to be like,
I
resolved to make the world a better place in 2008.
Oh, no, they're all selfish things.
Oh, I see. Okay, great.
Yeah, I don't have any selfless ones.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's still, I mean...
But the year is young.
The year is very young.
So once you get those out of the way by, like, June... You'll have all the rest of the year to handle it.
Definitely.
Well, I resolved in 2008. Well, first I'll start with me. I resolved in 2008 to be the best father that I can be.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
That was selfless. That's
a
good one.
I resolved that. I also resolved to continue to work on my writing. And the little bit of information about that, by the way, is that I've just sold my first book to, well, my not my first academic book was already published, but I've sold my first book of fiction to a small but pretty well-known press called Five Star, which is an imprint of Thompson Gale, the library publisher, and they're going to be producing it in June 2009. So my resolution in January 09 will be sell the book in 6 months when it comes out.
Right.
But, and I just finished my second book, Racing the Arrival of My Daughter, but I'm excited about that, and so I resolved to continue to work on my writing and resolve to be a good father, and that's basically my resolutions. And I think those two, especially the father one, that's a good... That's a good goal. You know, that's a good juicy
encompassing.
One.
Yeah, yes. No, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
So that's the deal.
I'm and not going to add that to mine, though.
No, to be a good father? That's good, because that'd be confusing
no,
for a daughter.
No, you got it taken care of.
Oh, okay, good. Well, that's fine. But if you guys have any resolutions you'd like to share, please let us know. No, we're not going to review them. This resolution is terrible. 2 out of 10. We're not going to do
know.
That.
Maybe if they're... It's so, you know.
Unless they're really great, then I guess we could give them positive reviews.
Well, maybe. That or maybe they're just like intense. If they're really like serious resolutions, we might need to review them.
That's true. Well, maybe so.
Because again, Greg, we review everything.
That's good. That's a good point. Well, anyway, as I said, Happy New Year to everybody. I want to mention very quickly that Michael dropped a couple of comments for us off on episode 52. And he said, I don't think I'm revealing any privacy since he made this a public comment. He thanked us for our comment about garden defense again. And he's now looking for a new job because Iwin laid them off after we finished. To which my response is, what are you kidding me? And I just want to be clear to Iwin out there, if you do this to fans of ours, you were in serious trouble. The full review weight of Upon Further Review will come down upon you. There's a gavel, a picture of a gavel on our front page. Now, if you don't want to be that gavel to be symbolic of what's going to happen to you, I suggest you rehire these people back if they want you, even at this point. I mean, come on now. And it was right around Christmas,
too. That's
like
the second company we threatened, IKEA, and then...
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, IKEA, you know, got themselves together.
Yeah.
So I think Iwin is going to have to step up to the plate. Or they'll be doing a different kind of defense. Anyway, Mike, we're sorry to hear that. I'm sure you're a very talented artist, so we have no doubt you'll find a job very soon. But that's too bad for Mike, and we're sorry about that. But we're sure he will find a new job. We're annoyed at Iwin, and so we just wanted to get that out there. Okay, three things that we've got on the docket for today. We're going to start by reviewing Vanity Presses, and I want to do this because it's on my mind since, as I said, I just sold my first book, and I've been thinking about the whole process of publication and how people, you know, get around to doing it, basically. So I'm going to start by talking about Vanity Presses and what we think about them. We'll have a couple of examples for you. Then we're going to review Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. I actually got this game, I don't know, Clay, maybe 3-4 months ago, and I've now had time to play enough of it where I think I have a sense of what the game is all about and wanted to review it on this show. And then we're going to conclude by reviewing a podcast which was submitted to us for review, which is called The Stuart Bedasso Show, and we will talk about that towards the end.
Okay.
All right. So let's get started with our first item, which is Vanity Presses. And I want to talk a little bit very quickly about what these are. I assume most of our listeners will know. But basically, in the publishing industry, you have essentially three ways to get to publication, to actually be holding a copy of a book in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
The first is through traditional publishing. And that normally involves either getting an agent and then having the agent market your book, whether it be romance or thriller or mystery or fantasy or literary fiction or nonfiction. And they take your book and go around to various companies, publishing houses like Random House and Ballantine and Del Rey and Tor and a whole bunch of those, and they try to get you a contract. If they do so, that publisher produces the book. If the book sells reasonably well, you may get more booked offers, and then on you go from there. Okay, that's the traditional, usual route. You can also sometimes directly contact some of these companies, either big companies like Tor, which have a big, what's called a slush pile, which is basically all the unagented manuscripts just sort of go into these places, and then they sit there for months and years while these poor, overworked editorial assistants read through them, and you may occasionally get a book published that way, although that's pretty rare. And then the last option is to go through the small publisher route. And for this first thing, this first book of mine, that's what I actually did. Five Star is a small press, but as I said, it's reputable, it's well known, they pay a, you know, a reasonable advance and so forth, so it's all part of the process of publication. The second method of publication is what's called vanity publishing, and I'll talk about that in a second. And the third option for publication is called self-publishing, which is just what it sounds like. You go to one of the many services that are out there. Probably lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com is the best, but there are some others as well. I believe iUniverse is another one. iUniverse, just the letter I, universe.com. Another one is Author House, which has gone back and forth from being a vanity press to being a self-publishing group. I don't know what they are right at the moment, to be honest with you. I don't remember if they're self-publishing. I think they say they're self-publishing. You can find them at authorhouse.com. And the self-publishing allows you to basically send your stuff off, and you pay them to publish your book. Now, the thing about self-publishing is there's no editorial. I mean, they will give you maybe copy editing assistance and things like that, but they don't look at it and go, yes, this book is worthy of publication. We're going to try to make money off of it. In a traditional publishing contract, you sell the rights to your work, and not all the rights, but you sell the rights stipulated in your contract to the publisher. They have the right to make money from the selling of your book, and you receive not only the advance they give you, which is a certain amount of money when you sign your contract with them, but they also give you royalties on every copy of the book that gets sold. Mm-hmm. So the point is that no money passes from me, the author, to them, the publisher, in this scenario. It's all the money is coming towards
me. So they're buying your product.
Yes, and that's the way that it ought to be done most of the time. In self-publishing, you're basically shouldering all the cost yourself. However, there have been some people who have done, you know, have made the self-publishing route work for them and have gone from sort of a kind of a low-level publish a few books, but they were very persistent. They got them into bookstores and they worked hard and they did everything. And they eventually managed to catch the notice of a larger publisher and eventually got into sort of mainstream publishing. Mm-hmm. And if all you're interested really is in having a book sort of printed in front of you so that you can give around to friends and family, self-publishing is a perfectly reasonable way to go. And a place like, you know, iUniverse or Lulu.com are very upfront that that's what they're doing. They're not deceiving anybody. They're just saying, this is what's going on and this is what you're doing. And you maintain all the rights. You come up with the artwork. You design the book. It's all your thing. Right. And that's fine. As long as you know what it is that you're dealing with, that's fine.
Right.
It's in the vanity publishing issue that you get the biggest problems. And that is the sort of, almost you might say, the middle ground. These are people who claim, pretend to be, regular kind of standard publishers. And they will usually sucker authors in who are desperate to get published. And they'll say, look, you know, we know that your work is marketable. One of the best examples of this, I was telling Clea, I saw in one of the forums that I frequent online. And they actually had said to this person, the person called up, and the author thought this was very special that the publisher actually called them directly to talk about it. And after about a half hour conversation where they explained this fee, which I'm going to tell you about in a minute, the person said, well, you know, the thing is, we think your book is marketable. We don't know why you wouldn't think your book is marketable. Wow, that's very impressive. Because of course, then it becomes, well, don't you think your book is good? Sure, you think your book is good. It ought to be a good book. Why wouldn't it be a good book? And so on and so forth.
It's just a sales pitch. If it's so good, then, and if you're a publisher, then why don't you buy it?
Of course. And it exactly. And it plays to the author's ego, and it plays to, you know, what it is that they're trying to do. Now, in the question, this particular group in question is a company called Living Waters Publication. Now, I went back and forth as to whether or not I wanted to reveal this information because I don't want to give them free advertising because of the reasons I'll talk about in a second. But I decided I'm going to do it just so the people out there can take a look and see what we're talking about. You can find them at livingwaterspc.com, livingwaterspc.com. Now, Living Waters Publishing Company is related to a Christian company, and basically their job is to publish Christian...
Called Living Waters.
Yeah, you know, called Living Waters. And their job, I don't know if they're actually directly connected to them or not, but anyway, it's a Christian publishing company, allegedly. And what they do is they talk to these various authors and get them to publish their books. Sounds impressive, you think. Okay, they want to publish their books. It's a Christian bookstore or Christian publishing. That's fine. So they describe the different pricing about this, right? They say traditional publishing, they talk about the quality of the book. A book may be accepted for traditional publishing. The company bears all of the costs associated with publishing the book. The following fee may still be incurred by the author. It says contractual errors on behalf of the author. This is a rare occurrence, but when it happens, the author is billed at $30 per hour for a correction. These errors can include wrong name, social security number, address, and our book information. Yes, it is such a rare occurrence, in fact, that it practically never happens. And when it does, the lawyer that vetted the contract in the first place is the one who would be more responsible than the person in question. This is an absurd thing to bring up. It's the fear factor. It's like, well, you better be careful because you can never be sure. And it says in the bottom of this column, and I love this, some authors may be offered in advance, but this is not typical. Actually, it is typical. Every major publisher pays in advance. Every single one without exception. If you're dealing with self-publishing, we've already talked about how that's a different model. But traditional publishing, everyone pays in advance without exception. So that's just a lie.
It says there for them.
No, it says no, they're not a traditional publisher. They don't do any of this kind.
Oh, this is just
this is what they're describing what other companies do. It says some authors may be offered in advance, but this is not typical. Again, a lie. It will depend solely upon the book's content.
Exclamation point.
Yes, which is true and the way that it should be. Why would you want your royalties based on anything but the book's content, pray tell? Is there something extra that I don't know about? Like, should you think to yourself, never mind about the garbage inside the book's covers. Have you seen the cover art? Like, what else would you base it on, right? Then they talk about self-publishing and about all the fees and the basic packages, and they list them all down, right? Here is the idea. The basic services of copyright protection, they have all of these different packages. Their best service, and they're listed beyond here, they have a different service that's listed right here. Their professional package that they list here is $2,000. It includes basic services, that means editing, you know what publishers do normally, 2 cover proofs, 24 months of extensive marketing services, that's code for we send your review out to several newspapers and magazines, distribution in 3 countries, let's say the US, Canada, and I don't know, the UK, 3 countries, LCCN numbers, that's I think an ISBN number, author presentation ads in Christian Vitality magazine. This package comes with a book signing contract.
Nice.
Now, if you're thinking to yourself, $2,000, Greg, that's a lot of money. How do you pay for that? Well, they have you covered, my friends, because as it says below, most authors do not have hundreds of dollars lying around. Financial shortages shouldn't keep you from realizing your dream. If you need help financing your program, please email us at acquisitions@livingwaterspc.com. Let us help you succeed. After all, your success is our business. So they will finance your selling of your property to them so that they can make money from you. And they're happy to help you do this.
This is
unbelievable that this happens. $2,000. And I've heard other contracts quoted that are $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 if you want to get this stuff published. But it doesn't end there, you think to yourself. Living Waters, okay, maybe they're one bad apple, right? But they're not even the big elephant in the room. The big elephant in the room is Publish America, which you can find at publishamerica.com, which lists itself. Their big slogan is, and I love this, we treat our authors the old-fashioned way. We pay them. And yes, they do pay in advance like traditional publishers. In fact, they say they're the nation's number one book publisher. 25,000 authors, Clea, have published with Publish America so far.
Cool.
800 Publish America books are bought per day by bookstores all across the country, yay, the world. Publish America, where you go if you can't get published in the mainstream. Except then you start looking at the fine print. Mm-hmm. Because, Clea, do you know what they pay authors for in advance?
Right, when they buy the book?
Yeah. What would be your guess?
I know the answer, so.
What might a rational person guess?
$1,000.
Sure. That's not a bad amount to start with. Publish America pays everyone $1. And they pay you no more or no less. If you're John Grisham or Stephen King or someone who has commercial success, they pay you $1. If you're someone like Cormac McCarthy or Toni Morrison, a literary author.
Going to publish America.
Well, I'm just saying. The point is, whatever the quality of the book, $1. Uh-huh. If you happen to be Joe Schmo with a book of poetry, $1. The point is, everyone gets paid $1. And they say that this is a symbolic act. Well, it certainly is symbolic because it doesn't actually matter. The whole point of this is designed to lure you in. Well, we're not one of those classic publishers. We give you $1. There are people on their message boards who talk about framing this dollar check that they've gotten because they're so happy that they finally become authors.
Right.
But here's the problem. Publish America's contract, first of all, is a 7-year contract. That means within that 7 years, you cannot move the book anywhere else. You can't get rights back. You can't try to get it to any kind of larger publisher if by some miracle your book gets picked up. Number two, Publish America's dollar contract deals with 2 books. That's all you get. You get 2 books, and those 2 books are yours to keep and do whatever you want with. Everything else depends upon who orders them. You think, well, sure, bookstores will order them, right? Except that bookstores don't get discounts from Publish America. The only one who gets discounts from Publish America are the authors. They get a very substantial discount. Seems odd, you might say. Why would you offer a substantial discount to an author? Well, you would offer that discount if you wanted to do business with the author, not with the bookstore. Because you see, Publish America's job is to make money from its authors. So by the time you get through marketing, by the time you get through selling, because there isn't a single reputable bookstore that is going to carry this book, by the way, because they're not returnable and because they don't get a discount on them. Every other major book gets discounts from major publishers or standard publishers. They get discounts. So because they don't get discounts, discounts, because they can't return the books, and because the books themselves are of terrible quality, with curling book covers, with, you know, books that are priced far more highly than other books in the marketplace, $25 sometimes for a paperback, you know, an 18-page children's book that's $19.95. Because of all these factors, reputable bookstores don't carry the books. So how do you get the books in the stores? Well, the author buys the books and then gives them to the store, brings them in on consignment, gives them away, just desperate to be able to actually see them. And you see thousands and thousands and thousands of authors falling for this on an everyday basis. The problem with these presses, and the reason that they're called vanity presses, is because just that. They appeal to the author's vanity. The author says, of course I'm a published author. They wouldn't have accepted my work if it wasn't good. And so these non-copy edited, non-well spell checked, non-vetted for any kind of quality at all manuscripts go into book form. The market gets flooded with garbage. And these authors are told, look, you've succeeded. You're a good author, without going through what everybody else has to go through, which is learning how to write better, which is learning how to write a critical, you know, learning how to write something, how to accept criticism, to use criticism to improve your work, etc., etc., etc. It is incredible to me that anyone still falls for this ruse, but clearly person after person after person has done so. And now they get stuck. There are class action suits pending against Publish America, but they word everything so carefully that they're ultimately going to be, you know, legally, generally held not liable for what they've done, except eventually they're going to trip up because there are too many people that are onto them now. As a last example that I'll give of the sort of horrendous quality of this publisher, a bunch of authors got together, because Publish America is also famous for sending a bunch of these notices about legal action to people who complain about them, which get laughed at because, of course, you know, what are you going to say? Like, do they really want to go into court and reveal their practices? It's just fear tactics, and it's ridiculous. They have no legal standing at all. So they claimed in one of these legal actions that they did lots of editorial vetting of their work. So a bunch of authors got together to try to test this claim, and they wrote a book called Atlanta Nights. And if you find it, I don't remember where it is, but you can just Google it and find it. It's called Atlanta Nights.
This is the publisher that was about?
This is the publisher.
I remember you telling me this.
Yeah, and the author's name was Travis T. Travesty. Mm-hmm. They sent in their book, which is, again, a compilation, with some of the worst writing that you are ever going to hear in the history of recorded time. In fact, let me see if I can actually find it, because they have a section on their page. Yeah, here we go.
Oh, Travis T. as T-E-A.
Travis T., author of Atlanta Nights. Here we go. Let me give you an example of the quote that they sent in from Chapter 25 of Atlanta Nights. Quote, Richard didn't have as sweet a personality as Andrew, but then a few men did, but he was very well built. He had the shoulders of a water buffalo and the waist of a ferret. He was reddened by his many sporting activities, which he managed to keep up with in addition to his busy job as a stockbroker, and that reminded Irene of safari hunters and virile construction workers, which contracted quite sexily to his suit and tie demeanor. Irene was considering coming on to him, but he was older than Henry was when he died, even though he hadn't died of natural causes, but he was dead and Richard would die too someday. Immediately accepted by Publish America, of course.
Of course.
Who then backfilled and said, oh, well, there may have been some oversight. Yeah, uh-huh, yeah, I'll bet. It's called that we don't pay any attention to you. These people prey on the desperate authors out there. And what's worse, they make things more difficult for the legitimate authors who are trying to do things the right way. They're bad. Self-publishing is a different matter if you know what you're getting into. But vanity presses, you don't know what you're getting into. And even if you do, you never know the extent of what it is you're getting into. So I apologize for this extended rant. I know Clea didn't have a lot to say during it. It just frustrates the hell out of me. And well, 2 out of 10.
Okay.
That's what I say. Do you have anything to say to add to it?
No. Well, I did. No. No. You took care of everything, honey.
Sorry. I'm just really annoyed.
I was going to try to, like, see if there's anything on Better Business Bureau on them or something, but Better Business Bureau's website is like, there's never really much that you can say. But yeah, no, I mean, it's very disconcerting. But, you know, there are a lot of authors that still back them up because, you know, it was a way for them to get published and stuff like that. It's just I don't understand why don't you do self-publish and then you don't have to pay.
Because it's this whole thing of someone else said you were good, except that they don't really care. You know, they didn't really.
They'll take anyone.
Sure.
So.
It's like a Nigerian email scam. You know, it just has no impact at all. There's in real life. Pardon me, sir. My father. So 2 out of 10 for Vanity Presses. If you are one of these authors, please do things the right way. If you want, you can even email us here at the show and I'll give you some suggestions. I've been through this process of going even to small publishers. There are so many other better routes than this route. So please don't do it. And Publish America I don't know how you guys sleep at night, but bad, bad people.
All right.
So 2 out of 10 for vanity presses.
Okay.
Now we're going to move on to the second item in the show for tonight, which is the Metroid Prime 3 Corruption game. And you can find this at wii.nintendo.com. And then I think if you go there and just click on Metroid Prime 3, there's a whole bunch of other things, but it doesn't matter. If you click on Metroid Prime 3, once you get to the Nintendo site, you'll find it.
All right.
This is for the Nintendo Wii game. Now,
Greg waited for this game for a while, man.
I did. I was looking forward to it. I like Metroid quite a bit. I played Metroid Prime 1 and Metroid Prime 2, both of which were very good. They were both in the GameCube. And when this game came out, it was very clever because they actually downloaded a preview first. So there's this preview you could download on the Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. He made me watch all... There were quite a few previews, not just one, Greg.
I was like, look at this film, Cleo.
There were like five.
Look at this puzzle game that they included. Isn't this great? Yeah, I know. It was a very good marketing scheme. Essentially, it follows. It's supposedly concluding this Prime series, and it involves the same major character whose name is Samus Aran, who's this female bounty hunter, who then this started way back in the original Nintendo, back in the mid, you know, the mid-80s or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there have been a whole ton of games, Metroid 1, Metroid 2, Metroid 3. There's Metroid games on the GameCube, and what is it, the Game Boy, and all these other ones. And this is sort of the latest iteration in the series. The thing that's really most different about this, I mean, I think you'd agree, Cleo, watching it, that the enemies are kind of, I shouldn't say the enemies, but the principle of the game is the same, where you've got a lot of different planets, you explore different planets.
Oh yeah,
planets.
But I think it's pretty much the same as the other two.
Right.
You know, and, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, because the other two are great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a combination of action, shooter up, where you're shooting these guys and doing these things, and also puzzles, where you have to solve puzzles getting from one level to another, or, you know, getting up on this one area, you know, pushing a button, having getting down
like
to some
Tomb Raider,
other area.
You like this.
Yes.
But in this case, I think it continued to get better with the gameplay choices, while in Tomb Raider, there were a few choices that they made that I think got worse.
I think you're right about that. That's true. Well, it's almost like they stuck with what worked and improved things that didn't, whereas in Tomb Raider, they just kind of stuck with the same game over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that's great about this game, and the sort of biggest difference in this game, is the fact that it uses the Nintendo Wii controller. So a lot of the motion-sensitive stuff that they couldn't do before is activated in this game. For example, there are parts of the game where you have a kind of like an energy whip, I guess you'd say,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually target it and press a button to lock onto something. And then if you move your hand forward, like you're throwing a whip, almost like a fishing pole almost, mm-hmm. casting it into the water, it'll throw the whip towards it and grab on, and then you pull it back as if you were doing it.
Right.
It's kind of a neat effect, and it shows you more and more of what the Nintendo Wii controller can ultimately do,
mm-hmm.
and makes you feel much more like you're in it. And the whole point of these games is to immerse you and make you feel like you're actually in the game and doing all these things that's going on.
Right.
In addition,
sometimes Greg will roll up in a little ball and then roll around the apartment.
Yeah, good cat throwing down bombs, which blow up and don't hurt me, or you, or anybody else. Somehow.
No, there's no bombs, Greg. Okay. Just well, rolling around.
She could roll up into a little ball and do that, yeah. The other cool thing about Metroid has always been cool is the lore of the game, because you're always going through these planets and feeling as if, you know, you fight enemies and different things, but you find these things that are sort of ancient planets.
Yeah, usually,
you know,
discovering like ancient civilizations.
And they always have stories behind them, you know, how they destroyed themselves or what led them to what, and, you know, and how and why. And in that way, it's always a very good mix of science fiction on the one hand and some fantasy elements to it as well, I think. Plus, the character is compelling. You know, you somehow get behind Samus and want her to succeed, and she's kind of an interesting character as well. I don't think that the game is particularly new other than the controls. I don't think there's anything that's like radically different from the previous ones. But I'm not sure, again, how much of a drawback that is, as Clea said, because the first ones were actually really good. The graphics are pretty good here.
Gameplay things that you said you liked, like things that she started with, that you had to get.
Yeah,
before.
That's true. Typically, you start one of these games and then there's like some explosion or something and you lose everything, and then
right.
you have to spend the whole game getting them all back. Here, you do get upgrades to your weapons and the suit and different things, but you also keep things that you had at the beginning, so you don't feel like, oh, well, look, I fell into the pit and I lost all my weapons. You know, you don't have to go through that again.
Right.
So that has changed. The sound effects are very good. The music is very good. And there are very impressive bosses. There are bosses that you look at and you go, wow, this is scary. And so that's pretty neat as well. One other difference in this game is for the first time you have dialogue. Before, you always read this lore on the screen or on the wall or something like that. Now you actually hear spoken dialogue from like the computer systems and things like that,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit of a difference. But in general, the same basic principle applies.
Okay.
I liked it. I think it's a very good game. I have not obviously won it or gotten anywhere even like halfway through it. But what I've played so far, I think it's well done, well constructed. I don't like the lock-on feature, which isn't as exact to me in this game as it was previously, but maybe that's because it's more realistic now. Like you actually have to aim your gun instead of just press button and then it fires and hits something. So I have to get used to that. But other than that, I'm impressed with it. I would say an 8.
Okay.
Out of 10 for Metroid. So 8 out of 10, good stuff. You should check it out. Okay, last one of the evening, and I'll let Clea start out with that because I've been doing so much talking this show. Sorry, I was just so mad at Vanity People. Is the Stuart Pedasso Show, and you can find this at two places, actually. First of all, this was submitted to us for review by Dave, who's one of the people in the show, who said that he wanted to check out the podcast, and the website he gives is bedasso.libsyn.com.
And our old crew, cast and crew, is back, and, well, I'm about as old as you can get, and if you're a first-time listener, my name is Dave, along with...
Kaziah, from Kaziah's Corner.
Oh. I'm
cheap
really,
plug.
I'm really sorry.
You
I
who?
I thought it was a plug.
Oh, it was. Sorry.
And?
Oh, yeah, Eric's here, too.
Oh.
this
Lauren
is
McCall.
Mike.
Oh.
And it's Lauren Bacall, yeah, for today.
You got it all.
Some more Kathleen Turner, but that was just me.
Let's check it out.
All right.
I don't know. I know Kathleen Turner. You're no Kathleen Turner.
And who can be no. Kathleen Turner?
Didn't she do Look Who's Talking, too?
Oof. Look Who's
Maybe.
Talking.
I have no idea.
She might have.
That's pretty much all I know her from.
You would have heard the voice of a baby?
Look Who's Talking?
Yeah.
That was Kirstie Alley.
That was Kirstie Alley.
No, but you mean the voice or the actress?
You think of John Travolta?
I don't think so.
I'm not... Yeah, I don't think so either, Mike.
Pretty sure.
I could see the resemblance. No, I think she was seriously in Body Double, am I not mistaken?
Yeah, well, that's where she first was... Right. I don't know.
She did
if
a
it's
bunch of movies
movie.
With Kirk Douglas, right? Well, not Kirk Douglas.
She did.
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. Mike Douglas, the
Ben Douglas.
Phil Douglas.
Ben Douglas. That's for all you Rochester listeners.
And you can also find information about it at their blog, which is bedasso.blogspot.com. And once you go there, then they have all the archives and things like that.
How many podcasts have we reviewed that has Libsyn in the...
Yeah, I was trying to think about that. There's probably like 6 or 7 anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, we definitely have a lot of... It's one of the big ones that's out there. I'm not a big Libsyn guy, but it works. I mean, it does what it needs to do.
Yeah.
And it is neat that they have their blog connected to it, so you can get from one place to the other pretty easily, which is good. Although we still don't know who Stuart Pedasso is, but I guess that's just one of those inside things.
Yeah, we listened
really
to 3
about.
And...
didn't really know where Stuart was, but...
There's no history on their website or
anything? No, not that,
that
I've been able to find.
See, so.
The websites themselves, although they're easy to navigate, don't seem to have a lot of history on them. And even their blog mostly just seems to have show notes about the original thing, which I think it might be, and they have a Cafe Press site too there that's connected, but I still think it'd be kind of neat if they said some things about the post-production or pre-production or things that you can't find on the one show, because otherwise why have a separate, you know? I mean, it's easy to get between them, but I just didn't think there was that much information.
Well,
for my
other than like teasers, I don't really understand the whole blog site.
Right.
Again,
yeah, that's true.
It's pretty much just notes section, which you could have on your regular podcast site.
Right. So.
So I don't really see the point of it.
You want to talk about what the show is all about?
Well, it's usually 3 individuals. I think there might be up to what, 4 or 5 different possible people?
I think so. Well, besides the inimitable Stuart, who I don't think actually exists, there's Eric, Kaziah, Jill, and Dave. Now, we heard Eric, Kaziah, and Dave a lot, and I don't know how much of Jill we heard or didn't. I think she may be a less active person, but the 3 major ones are Eric, Kaziah, and Dave.
Okay. So there are 3 parts to this. There is the regular talking podcast aspect, and then there is a music segment where they play... anywhere from 2 to maybe 6 songs.
Well, they intersperse the songs, right?
And then there also seems to be an aspect of the third part, at least I think was in each of the 3 that we listened to, with the woman, is it
Kaziah.
Kaziah.
Kaziah. It's the file sharing program joins them in avatar form. Sorry, Kaziah.
She... it's talking about, it sounds like just different, like a different things that happened to her, like different, like a night or a day or something that happened to her, just telling a story. And so that's the three parts of it. And the title of the show is kind of the independent talk, independent music. So I guess they're kind of thinking that's the theme, is that they're kind of hip, independent people talking about their lives. Most of them, I think, live in Hawaii. So that's definitely kind of a particular kind of feel to the way that they are and the way that their lives are going. And then also playing some music. So that's about the show.
So, and you know, I should say, you know, the audio quality is very good, and there's clearly, and they are very nice people, and I want to emphasize that, not because that sounds like a terrible, but
yes,
nice
people.
Yes,
an awful way to start.
I don't mean it that way. I mean that they're genuinely nice people, and that comes through
in
the show, as I've said before.
Let me say that with any podcast, right, even with our podcast, even though we have a particular goal in mind of a review show, there is a lot of talking that we do. Our personalities do come through. So with any podcast, the whole point of it is, do you like the people? Do you like how they talk? Do you like what they have to say?
Right.
Do you like their personalities? And so this, like any podcast, is going to be dependent upon that.
Right.
And so I guess what they might be offering you is a unique dynamic and their particular take on their lives living in Hawaii.
Right.
Now, with that being said, then, that with any podcast, you should go and listen and see if you find them interesting.
Right.
See if you like them. See if you like listening to them for a half hour. Most of the shows are actually an hour, right?
Yep.
If you do, then great. You found something that's nice, easy listening. You might not like them. And that has nothing to do with necessarily the quality of the show or the purpose of the show. If you just don't like who they are and what they have to say, then it's not for you.
The reason we're kind of being a little bit circumspect about this is to be very honest, we found the show really boring. And I don't know if, you know, and as I said, we listened to three shows at different times. I don't know if that's just because there wasn't a lot interesting that happened that week. But as is often the case with some of these talk things, if there's not a lot interesting happening that they have to talk about in these freeform shows, then it's not going to come through as being interesting just because you record it. And I think that was kind of the issue here. They have a section called Keziah's Corner, where she talks about her experiences, and she talks about the experiences of going out to bars and different things that happen.
Right.
But all the stories seem to involve the same thing of going to a bar and then making out with someone, and I don't... That's
Somewhere
just not interesting.
Gets drunk.
I don't. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't. It's not interesting. And also, there's very little. I mean, I'm sure they do editing because of the audio quality I mentioned, and obviously they have to edit in the music. But there's no editing within the space. Like if you're going along and all of a sudden there's just this huge dead space. This will happen sometimes in UFR. You know, we'll be talking and all of a sudden we say something and we start laughing and you think, okay, that's not appropriate, and we take it out, or do we just pause because we don't remember what we wanted to do, something we forgot what we wanted to say? Mm-hmm. We cut that out later on, so that you don't hear that. That doesn't happen here. So there are parts where they even go on and they say, they're talking to each other, and then they kind of go, and then there's this
pause.
Well,
that's my thing is, again,
and then they say,
there's different personalities. If the majority of them are in Hawaii, you know, we could be somewhat biased.
No.
But with respect to, we are kind of East Coast people, Greg. And yeah, there are, as you would say, what was it from the D&D movie with that one actress you hate? There are pauses that you can drive a Mack truck through.
Oh, that's right.
And
I don't remember who
they're
that was.
Not pauses that make sense as to a flow that you can still keep following it. It's sometimes pretty painful for us to listen to it at times. So, I mean, it's all a personal preference. So that just has to be said, that you might go and I find her stories boring because she wasn't giving any personal insight. She wasn't talking about any particular exciting events that happened
to
her.
She even says at one point, she's like, well, I'm rambling on. And we're like, yes, you are.
I mean, it wasn't like, you can't believe this story. Okay, I was out of this club and a shark jumped off out of the water onto the porch of the restaurant. I mean,
and then it starts going, like, hello, my baby. Like, yeah, that would be ridiculous, like, but at least
it was literally. So I went to this bar, and then this lady came in, and so my other friend that was with left. I guess she had enough,
and then we made out, and then she left.
She was saying, "You're not my type."
I, And again, like, all of these stories are being told from someone who's clearly a very nice person, like, and that niceness comes through, but it's the kind of thing that I think it didn't work for us. As Clea says, it doesn't mean it's not going to work for other people.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they're not going to, you know, find an audience that will be amused by this kind of thing. And certainly there's a place for the sort of freeform conversation. But the one bit of advice that I would give, first of all, is sort of trying to establish the blog /, you know, what the relationship.
If you're going to have a blog, make it a blog.
You know, if you're going to do that, would be my first thing. And then the second thing would be to say, you don't have to include everything you ever say. You don't. You can cut some of it out. You don't have to include the 10-second gaps. You don't. Whether it's East Coast, West Coast, or anything, it's a matter of editing it so that you're producing a better show for your listeners, ultimately. And again, if all you're looking to do is just give this to friends and family, that's fine. But that's not, I don't think, what they want to do.
It sounds
to me like they really want to get out there to other people. And they definitely
They were really
had,
excited about reaching their, what was it?
There was their 1,000th download. That was in May that they had done that. So I'm sure they've gone even more than that now. And that's great. And they obviously have an audience that likes them to a degree. But I think if they want to build that audience, a little bit of editing, I'm not saying make it into some snappy Hollywood production, but a little bit of editing and cutting out that stuff would go a long way, I think, towards making that a better and more sort of engaging show. And so that was kind of our take on it. But as I say, your mileage may vary, and this is just our comment alone. There have been people who have said, you know, Clea just scrolled down to look at the quotes. I love the show. I've been laughing my off ever since I discovered it. You sound like a funny guy. And that's great.
Well, that was one thing too. I think for the most part, we found it family friendly in that.
Well, the language, but a lot of the stuff they talk about is not necessarily family friendly. But they don't swear a lot, and that's good because that would be annoying.
But yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, is that they're a group of people, majority of them living in Hawaii. And that's a different take, you know, and they talk about living in Hawaii. And she's got a lot of different jobs, you know, Old Navy, waitress, that kind of stuff. So you get to hear kind of what it's like to do the normal American things in an entirely different state.
Right. So there is that.
So there's definitely, you know, if this might be, you know, the group of people that you love to listen to. So it's definitely worth trying. I mean, they are worthy of a listen to see whether or not they are a good match for you, definitely.
Rating?
5.
Yep, that's what I would have said. I think a 5. And as I say, this may be more your cup of tea than it was ours, but it's certainly, as Clea says, worth giving a listen to. It just ultimately wasn't our thing.
Right.
So 5 out of 10 for the Stuart Pedasso Show. Okay, that's going to take care of the show for this week. I want to thank everybody for listening to us. Please spread the word. Tell your friends. Tell everyone you know. And please keep in contact with us. And thanks, as always, for listening. And again, have a great 2008.
Yay.
I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you next week. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!